This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Dan Campbell is a good soundbite. Head coach of the Detroit Lions. Here he is on 97.1 in Detroit doing a hit with the station up there. And he is fired up to go up against the Texans on Sunday night.
Man, this team is, I love the way this team plays. I mean, they play an aggressive style, explosive, fast type of football. And look, this quarterback, I think, has done an outstanding job. He's one of these really good young players in this league. I do think they're going to get Nico back. We're prepared for him. We're thinking he's coming back. He's outstanding. You know, this old line, there's been a little bit of, you know, they had some injuries here and there, but you know, the scheme and the things that they're able to do up there, they can do a lot to you. And Mixon's playing a very high level. And then this defense, man, I mean, they hum now. They are smoking. They are up the field. They're aggressive. You know, they play a nasty style game. They finish on the football. It's going to be an all-out brawl, man, out in Houston, Houston, Texas on Sunday night. And, man, we're looking forward to it, man. This is one of those. Like I say, that's what excites you, man. Every week, you know, we just came off a big division win, and now we're rolling into another great opponent here in prime time Sunday night at their place. And, man, they play the style of football that we're looking forward to facing.
All right. Here, listen here, Dan Campbell. Listen here, D'Amico. You guys are both, you guys are now Dan Campbell. You and D'Amico are both big time SEC guys, okay? Can we take a hint from SEC media days? All right. Can you get a little bit more Lane Kiffin in you?
A little more chippy? Yeah.
Yeah, a little less respect between opponents.
Yeah.
I feel, right, D'Amico and Dan Campbell are wired so similarly in so many ways. Now, you know, Campbell's got a lot more meathead tendencies to him, but I do feel like it feels like two heavyweight fighters that, you know, would definitely hug after the fight was over.
Yeah.
After a 15-round championship brawl,
yes,
they would be like hugging each other in admiration and respect for how hard the other one, you know, they're draped over each other. Neither one can stand on his own.
Yeah.
Which is cool for the movies, but all right, you're not going to butter me up, Dan Campbell.
That's right.
With your gushing praise of my football team, damn it.
Dude, I'm so easily sold to. Dan Campbell could sell anything to me, man. He's like, man, this defense, man, it hums. It hums, and they hit. And I'm like, dude, if I walked onto a parking, like a car lot, and I was looking for a new car, and Dan Campbell was the salesman that came up to me, and he starts selling me, man, this GPS they got in here, I'm telling you, man, this baby, this hums, and you're going to go down the highway, and you're going to go fast. I mean, like, so fast in this thing, man. Let me tell you. I would buy from Dan Campbell. I could see, like, we were laughing when he got hired by the Lions, but, like, now I see. Like, you do enough Dan Campbell press conferences, and I can see, like, how he had the Ford family, like, ready to go.
Well, the whole thing, too, and I know a lot of, there's people get exasperated when, you know, D'Amico is pushing the positivity and all that because they start feeling like, oh, he doesn't coach them hard enough or what have you. You always have to remember that whether you yell in press conferences or yell on the sideline or not, that often has zero to do with actually how much you're coaching the guys. Yeah. Like, how much you're actually trying to fix the issues and how much are you, what standard are you holding them to?
Yeah.
And I think D'Amico holds his players to a very, very high standard. Problem is, he's a defensive-minded head coach, and it's really only showing up on the defensive side of the ball right now.
Yep.
So, as the head coach, that his method is working just fine for the defense. And there's things they need to improve on, but they're like Dan Campbell. Dan Campbell, I take that at face value. He says the defense is humming. That's the way they play. They're flying around all over the place. They make a few too many errors in coverage at times, but they are flying all over the place. The offense, it doesn't feel that same way. They're not.
No.
There's no. Dan Campbell didn't say that offense is humming.
Nope.
You know,
he mentioned CJ, and that's it. CJ and Nico.
Yeah.
CJ and Nico.
Yeah.
That's it. I guess, too, well, let's play one more from Campbell here. Here's Campbell. This is at his press conference earlier this week, his coach's media session. Do you see similarities between the Lions and the Texans?
Yeah, I do. I mean, look, they've got a lot of young talent that they hit on. And it's funny because most of those players over there are all players that we really were high on, too, you know. And so when you see that and you see some of these players, you're like, man, that was a good one. You know, that was a good pick they got there. And you see how hard they play and the type of football players they are. And so I do think there's a lot of similarities, you know. And there again, I think they've drafted well. I think D'Amico's done a hell of a job going in there. And just the style of play that they have, I think the quarterback's played well. They got one there. And they're like anybody else. They've had to go through some injuries and stuff this year. And they're battling through it. And they're, you know, they're still one of the top teams in this league. So they're finding ways to adapt and continue to win. So it'll be a challenge.
This is where I do take that praise from Dan Campbell, because that's unique praise, talking about, okay, seeing the guys that they had scouted the same. It's bordering on tampering, really. If he had mentioned a name, you know, he could have gotten, sure. If he had said, yeah, Damian Pierce, my God, we'd take him in a heartbeat. I know he's been injured, but
here
I don't
are the
care.
Five guys that we had high grades on their
yeah,
roster.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I do take that at face value, and it did make me feel good, because I think that if you go back to the Bill O'Brien days, Bill O'Brien would talk about smart, tough, dependable. Yeah. And I think he genuinely cared about smart, tough, dependable. But I don't know how good they were at judging the smart and tough part. Mm-hmm. I think they were really good at dependable in terms of, hey, wow, this guy shows up on time. Hey, this guy admits when he made a mistake, all that. Okay, great. The smart and tough part, I don't think O'Brien was all that great at identifying guys who were genuinely tough.
Yeah.
And I think on this Texans team right now, I feel like they've done a pretty good job of identifying guys that are genuine football nerds that really love football. So that, yes, once, you know, it's any more than the salaries are so high, even for rookies, that guys who are motivated solely by money, that doesn't last long, because you get a lot of money real early. So yeah, you got to have something else aside from love of money that keeps motivating you.
Yep.
And getting guys that are genuine football nerds, that's where you go. And I think the Texans have done a good job of identifying that at every area except on the offensive line.
Agreed.
I don't sense a lot of genuine toughness there. I don't sense a lot of genuine love for football. I think the offensive tackles are playing, they're playing winning football, but I've never thought of the offensive tackles as guys who are like down in the dirt, gritty, love football, would run over my mother to win a Super Bowl type of guys. And that's an issue. It doesn't get fixed immediately.
No.
It's going to be over the course of the next couple of years. You got to identify more Joe Mixon types, more Aziz Alshire types, and have those guys be your offensive linemen.
I'm glad you brought up Alshire, because that's where I was going to go is with the Nico Collins and Will Anderson injuries, and I'll even throw Jared Patterson in there. Those are the three injuries that have gotten the most attention over the last handful of days. And Nico and Will Anderson are going to get a ton of attention here over the next couple of days. Aziz Alshire being back and fully ready to go. Credit Neville Hewitt and Jake Hansen and Henry Toa for, you know, last week, for doing a nice job of kind of, you know, stemming the tide while Aziz is out. Aziz is better than all those guys. He's a better football player than all those guys. Him being back, like, how crucial is Aziz Alshire being back for this team when it comes to going up against this particular? I mean, he's been really good in pass coverage this year. Yeah. He's been really good running sideline to sideline. I was really sad to see him leave with the injury, because I thought Aziz Alshire was having, like, I don't watch inside linebacker play across all 32 teams. I just know the inside linebacker play I'd been watching from Aziz Alshire over the last month or so before he got hurt was at a very, very high level compared to what we'd seen over the last several years.
I think that one thing is, I think they got to feel more comfortable playing with three linebackers on the field at times, because the entire first half of the season, they were a two linebacker operation.
Yeah.
And now they've had a bunch of different guys have to come in and play for him. And I think it filled in pretty well. But against really good rushing teams, that there's got to be times where, man, you line up in your base 4-3 alignment. And they just didn't feel comfortable doing that in the first half of the season. Hopefully with Aziz Alshire back, and then with these other guys having had a little bit more playing time, and eventually if Christian Harris comes back, that you can line up, and when other teams are just saying, hey, we're just gonna run the ball on you, that you can line up and play, and maybe they're a little bit more capable.
So if you're lining up in three linebacker formations to go against the line, because I think the Lions are the exact type of team you're talking about. You can't be light. You can't be light as a team out there against this Lions team. They'll rush for 250 yards against you know what I mean?
Right.
So if that's the case, obviously Alshire, Toa Toa, and who's the third guy then? Neville Hewitt, Jake Hansen?
Now, depending on situation, Neville Hewitt or Jake Hansen, and that becomes like, okay, do you anticipate, okay, is this a heavy, heavy run situation is it a, because like Jake Hansen provides more athleticism for more speed and everything in range than Neville Hewitt does, but Neville Hewitt just comes up and thumps.
Yeah, he does. He does, no doubt about it, man. Sean Pendergast, Seth Payne with you on a Thursday here. Let's hear one more from the Lions. This is their quarterback, Jared Goff. This is Jared Goff's impressions so far of the Houston Texans.
Yeah, they're good. They're really good. They're really well coached. They remind me of San Francisco, and no surprise, back when I was in LA, that in division San Francisco, like when D'Amico was there, it was similar. Very good defense and good up front, good at the linebacker position, good at the defensive backs, really well coached, sound. They do a good job.
It's Jared Goff has to feel a little familiar with what he's seeing as, you know, he's spent that much time, played San Francisco in the NFC title. Well, D'Amico was obviously here at that point. But, yeah, all those years with L.A. going against D'Amico Ryans.
And going against Robert Sala. Yeah. And because, you know, D'Amico's
Robert
defense,
Sala, yeah.
You know, he just built on a lot of what Robert Sala did. So I don't think it's as simple as, we know the book on these guys.
Yeah.
But it probably makes it a little bit easier for him. I think, one thing that Goff has done a really good job of is just hitting the outlet, hitting the hot, hitting the utilizing the screen game. Mm-hmm. And he's I don't want to say he's the same guy he's always been, because that almost feels like an insult, because he was shipped out of the Rams. He doesn't have otherworldly arm talent, but he manages the game well enough, and he's very capable of making the big time throws. And he's certainly capable of getting the ball to Jamison Williams when Jamison Williams is wide open downfield.
Yeah.
Jamison Williams is able to make one guy miss after he catches the ball. So game manager is such a loaded term. I think he's in that offense. He is running that offense perfectly.
Yeah.
He just, like, as evidenced by his passer rating over the last six games. He's got the highest passer rating in a six-game span in NFL history. He's not wasted. There's no wasted motion with him trying to make the right decision. He's got options, and he knows where to go with the ball.
He's the best quarterback in the NFC right now. You know, like, the AFC has all the big names. Like, right now, if the season ended today, the seven playoff teams in the NFC, and it's wild to look at this. Like Detroit, we all expected to be good. They would be a division winner. They'd be the one seed. They'd have the home field advantage. The other playoff teams are Washington leading the NFC East. Nobody predicted that. Atlanta leading the NFC South. They were thought to be the favorites in a bad division, but they've actually been a pretty good football team so far. They're 6-3. Kirk Cousins, despite them drafting Michael Penix, has had a really, really good season for the Atlanta Falcons. And then Arizona is the leader in the NFC West. The other three playoff teams are Minnesota, who people thought was going to be bad this year, and then Philadelphia and Green Bay, who people thought were going to be, I think people viewed them as potential playoff teams. It's just wild that those are the four division leaders in the NFC right now, that Washington and Arizona are playoff teams right now in the NFC.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Arizona held the Lions to, I think, 16 points, 17 points when they played in the second game of the season.
Look, you said 20 earlier.
Fact check me on that.
Yeah, fact check.
What's that?
You said 20 earlier, but
I did.
Yeah, they lost 20. They lost 20-13 to the Lions.
Oh, so they only scored 13
No. The Cardinals lost 20-13 to the Lions.
Exactly.
So they
so
only
I was
allowed
all along.
You were correct all along. They only allowed 20 points to the Detroit Lions, the Arizona Cardinals.
I wasn't correct at any point during that exchange.
Off the air, you were to me. You said 20 earlier.
My memory failed me.
Yeah.
Yeah, Sean, that was like 12 minutes ago.
I know. Payne and Pendergast with you. The 5-Hour Energy fan line, 5-Hour Energy, the official energy shot of Sports Radio 610 and football superfans. Oh, we forgot about Devin White. That's true. Somebody texting in. Devin White is on the Houston Texans as well.
Oh, yeah.
Aziz, Toa Toa, and Devin White. Would that be a good trio, Seth? Somebody's asking.
Yes, in certain situations. Yeah. Devin White, I think, needs to be used situationally.
Keep forgetting about Devin White.
Right. Well, yeah, and look, I've forgot a lot about a lot of stuff in the last week, just consciously. I think that Devin White is a guy that can be used selectively to great effect.
Yeah.
And I think you've got a menagerie of linebackers now for different situations that I feel better about.
Mm-hmm.
I feel better about their ability to line up and play with a lot of these guys when they need to go to a 4-3.
The Texans, this is an interesting text because this plays into something I've said about the Texans. I think this is a little extreme, but it's in the same neighborhood of something I've been saying. Texter says the Texans are a team that loves to win, but it doesn't look like they hate to lose, and that's a huge difference. And I think I don't know what their love of win and hate to lose is. This I do know. I'm basing this on a year and a half worth of evidence under DeMeco Ryans. Is I don't think this team has a good killer instinct. I think they have a very good survival instinct, and those are two very, very different. If they had a good killer instinct, they would be winning some of these games by 20. That are very winnable by 20. They let teams back into games. They play down to lesser teams way too often for a team that is a, quote, good football team. Now, when it gets to nut-cutting time in the fourth quarter, and they've done it against good teams and they've done it against bad teams, but more often than not, they're able to figure some things out late in games to be able to be the team that survives. So yeah. I think the texter is framing it. The texter is framing it in a way that if I were a player or coach on the Texans, I would take it far more critically than the way I'm framing it, that you don't have a great killer instinct, but you've got a great survival instinct. Someone saying that flat out they love to win and they hate to lose basically implies a level of softness, I think.
Yeah, I guess that's the hard part where what does hate to lose look like? Like, how exactly do you tell whether a team hates to lose or
it's
not?
The amount of helmets that you throw afterwards. I need more helmets.
I guess, so I don't know. It's kind of vague. Like, and I don't know. Maybe that person's correct, but then you start, then, okay, which of the guys on the Texans don't hate to lose. It's
the
just,
offensive,
again, we come,
let's start with the offensive line like we always do.
That's where
do.
You go back to. I always go back to the offensive line. Like, it's hard for me to make a general statement about the character of the Texans team when so many of the issues come back to the offensive line and the composition and where the issues are. I feel really comfortable that Joe Mixon hates to lose. I think CJ Stroud hates to lose. I think most of the guys on the defense really hate to lose. Nico Collins hates to lose. So it's, name names when it comes to, don't even name names.
Name names.
The position group as a whole, I think, just feels like, all right, the offensive line feels like things are just cruising along and hey, whether it's true or not, that's the way it feels sometimes.
Man. Yeah, the season. It's a countdown to Coachella, man. That's what it is.
I just like when you lead the league in penalties every other year, it feels like, I don't know, maybe you don't hate some of the negatives as much.
Well, it depends on the penalty. I would say if they led the league in unsportsmanlike conduct penalties, that means they hate to lose. When you lead the league in false starts, that doesn't necessarily translate to hating to lose. That translates to laziness and inattentiveness, you know?
Yeah.
There's certain penalties they'd be like, well, that guy definitely hates to lose. He just punched a guy. Yeah.
Devin White, the first 2 weeks ago in his first appearance, he played like half the defensive snaps. He played 10 snaps last week versus the Jets.
Okay. Wonder why
that
would be.
Which I think is more in line with what I expected.
Yeah.
I think, again, when teams start to get a feel for what guys can and can't do, then, you know, they're going to attack those things. And Devin White, who's only been on the defense for a couple of weeks and has always been really inconsistent in coverage, I'm guessing the Texans didn't quite trust him to be out there as much as the other guys.
Have you ever had an employer not follow through on a promise that they made to you? This is a former Houston athlete. This is one of the more amazing promises that was made. I think this is a promise that would get this particular owner who made it in trouble. We'll tell you what it is coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Real quick, just a follow-up. The texter who said the Texans are a team that loves to win, but it doesn't look like they hate to lose. That's a huge difference. He did follow up after you and I conversed about that for a bit, Seth, and said, I should have said the offensive line, not the whole team. I apologize. So it sounds like we convinced him, like, hey, man, maybe there are some, because there's people texting in, dude, watch a C.J. Stroud press conference. That guy despises losing.
yeah. And it's all, yeah, and we weren't trying to crush the guy or anything.
No. It's just, he knows.
Sometimes, too, you always have to, when a team shows up and gets destroyed, sometimes you got to really check yourself and think, wait a second. All right, why did they get destroyed? And it was because, one player fumbled twice, and then another player made a boneheaded error that led to a touchdown, and they were down 21-0 really because two guys made really bad mistakes, yeah. Or maybe those two didn't show up to play, but the rest of the team ends up getting thrown under the bus because of it.
Yeah.
I think this team, despite their inability to look like the depth chart looks, to play up to what the potential looks like on paper, they have showed a lot of grit in close situations. Mm-hmm. So that's the part where I don't worry that there's something systemically wrong with the whole character of the team or anything. I think it's that they've got some big problem areas from a strictly football competency side of things that are holding them back.
Yeah.
And some of that might be on Bobby Slowick, some of it's on the offensive line, but it's nothing that makes me feel like, oh, this is a team that doesn't want it.
No, I agree with that. I almost think to gauge something like that, you have to be in the locker room, like how much this guy hates losing. Like there's so little that we see as fans that would translate to how much a guy loves winning versus hating losing. You know what I mean?
I felt bad. That was that 2005 year where we were 2-14.
Yeah.
Where I got really just kind of disgusted over everything was when we had to talk to some of the guys on the team about, like, hey, tone it down a little bit on the plane ride home after we got crushed. You know, like, all right, it's just there was an element there, and sometimes there's nothing you can do about it. That's one of my greatest regrets, is that, like, okay, as a team leader, how was I not able to, like, squash that? But I think some of it is that it's just that's the character of the guys on your team.
Yeah.
If you don't have the right kind of guys that really care about it, then sometimes the battle is lost. There's no pep talk.
That's what
I tell myself every night when I can't go to sleep, thinking about my regrets, Sean.
In 2005, yeah.
Now.
Oh, now.
20 years later.
Yeah.
Just like, don't worry, Seth. You're not that big of a bastard.
Not all cancers are curable, man. You know, like sometimes, you know, just you losing had metastasized. That's all it was. Nothing you could do about it.
We were stage four that year, man.
All right. Have you ever had an employer back out or welch or make a promise that they just didn't follow through on? This was an interesting story. This is Pat Beverly, former Rocket. He was on his podcast talking about this, about how he got an offer 1 year from Sacramento, 3 years, $50 million. He chose to go to the Clippers for less money, $40 million, because Steve Ballmer, the owner of the Clippers, made him a promise. This is back in 2019.
What was the higher offer?
$50 million for 3 years.
Okay.
Instead, he took $40 million for 3 years. So it was a $10 million
delta. $10 million less to go play. Okay.
Because of a promise that was made. Yeah. Here it is.
So I signed my deal with the Clippers, right? I got like a three-year $50 million from Sacramento. And I'm like, nah, I'm cool. Like, I want to stay Clippers. So I take the three-year $40 million from the Clippers. We go to the meeting at the Ritz in Marina Del Rey. And we agree to the three-year $40 million. And Steve Ballmer goes, with that, I'm going to give you 94 basketball courts that you could choose to put all around L.A. That's fire as f-. I think they built two of them, and then COVID hit. So I hit my agent like, what's up with those 92 basketball courts? I see they just built the arena worth $2 billion. Like,
yeah, what's the answer? What's going with the courts, Steve?
Do I get my 92 courts? And we shook on it, too.
Steve?
I need 92 more courts, though, bro. I got a lot going on I want to do for the city of Los Angeles, man. I got 92 courts I want to build still. And you know me, I brung it back up. I was on the opposing team, I think Minnesota. I'm like, yo, where the fuck my courts at? Like, what's up? Oh, yeah. You want to talk to Steve? I got to talk to Steve. What a courts at?
92 basketball. He owes Pat Beverly 92 basketball courts.
I don't know how much it costs to build a basketball court, but I'm guessing it's way more than what I think it should. There's just everything.
Right. Especially in L.A., right?
In L.A., and especially when you're, okay, you're talking about, wait, are we going to have to, like, acquire land for this? Or are we just going to go in and revamp that? I would ballpark it at $100,000. Maybe that's crazy. That's probably crazy. That's probably way too much.
Per court?
But I'm
curious, are they indoor courts? Are they outdoor courts?
I'm guessing Ballmer. If you're talking 92 courts, that's a lot of playground courts.
Yeah.
That's got to be.
That's what I thought.
You're not building 92 community centers or something.
I got you. Yep. I'm with you on that. I thought outdoor.
I figure 100,000 because that works out to about, that's 9.2 million,
yeah.
Close to 10 million.
Yeah.
Where Ballmer doesn't have to, Ballmer's paying the same thing, but he doesn't, that's not covered. He doesn't have to worry about the luxury tax or anything like that.
Yeah.
Let's say it's only, let's say it's 50,000 per court and it's a little bit less than 5 million. That's a big one. That's a big one.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to hear a Steve Ballmer response from this. And if I know anything about Mike Florio, he's going to cross over into whether or not this is a luxury, a CBA violation.
That's where I'm going with this. And that's what I'm curious about. And this is where I would back Florio in this, were he to make this one of his crusades, is did Steve Ballmer just skirt the salary cap and the luxury tax, more importantly, of $10 million? Because we know that Clippers team operates way over all the cap, or at least historically has since Ballmer got there. They are not afraid to sign star players and go way over the tax and everything. This is not the Clippers of Donald Sterling back in the day. It's a very, as they just pointed out, Steve Ballmer just paid for his own arena that was $2 billion. Like, he built it, you know? So that's what I'm curious about, man. Like, is this are the Clippers a scofflaw organization, and is Steve Ballmer a welcher for not building 92 basketball courts for pay? Builds two, and then like, sorry, he's like the guy that came. He's like one of those contractors that you sign up to do a pool in your backyard, and they dig the hole, and then they just don't show up anymore. Like, so now all you have is this gigantic hole in your backyard. Like, thanks a lot, Ballmer. Thanks for digging a big hole in my backyard and then walking away. Heading to Tahiti or something.
According to internet, for a concrete court, you're looking at between $15,000 and $45,000.
Oh, Ballmer's getting off easy here, man.
Yeah.
Oh.
For less than $5 million, he could have fulfilled his promise to young Patrick Beverly.
Far less than $5 million.
Could have skirted the salary cap.
Yeah.
Well, I'm figuring $50,000 per, I don't know.
Yeah, probably.
These things, especially when you start, you got to grease palms in the various municipalities that you're at and all that. It's never as easy as plus this is some contractor saying that it's up to $45,800, which means, all right, you mean it's $70,000. You're just not going to tell me about it until you're midway through.
That's true. Of all the players in the NBA that I would not want to piss off because I didn't build his basketball courts, Beverly's pretty high up on that list, I think.
Yeah.
Pat Beverly will fight you over he'll fight you over very little things, let alone just skirting 92 basketball courts you promised to build him.
And I think Beverly would win that fight versus Ballmer. Steve Ballmer.
I think Ballmer would pay somebody to fight for him. Like, no, you're not fighting me, you're fighting... He'd hire like a UFC guy or something to fight
Beverly. No, Ballmer would do that thing like from Gladiator where Commodus hired somebody to slit his Achilles heel or something.
Yeah.
What did he do to him? Didn't Commodus have Russell Crowe's... He had him weakened somehow.
I don't remember. I've only seen Gladiator once, and it's because you shamed me into watching it. Remember that?
Yeah. Well, I expect you to be in it. Me seeing it 20 times versus you seeing it once means
true.
That you should have better knowledge and memory of it. Okay?
There's a pain to Pendergast conversion chart. text message, 5-Hour Energy fan line. Tunsil has a very Dwight Howard feel about losing. Over it in 10 minutes, no matter how big the game is.
Yeah.
Oh, is that fair? Is that fair to Laramie Tunsil to put Dwight Howard on him?
His Tunsil, I want to be fair about this because it's, you're kind of casting aspersions and everything.
Yeah.
I think it's tough for Tunsil because his whole way of kind of operating goes against the grain of your classic vision of offensive linemen.
Yes.
And,
Many respects.
So it's hard. It's hard to embrace that, and it's understandable. And it also doesn't help that his game is largely one of – it's a finesse game. He's known as a really good pass protector and a sometimes good run blocker, sometimes not so much, but certainly not an impressive run blocker. And so then the social media presence and everything, there's a feeling about that with people.
Someone said there is Pro Basketball Talk as a website on NBC, so unfortunately this hill will be Kurt Heelan's to die on.
But Florio would cross Florio would totally cross over if it came into a rules and regs violation.
yes. Someone says Ballmer would hire hire the Mountain from Game of Thrones to fight for
it. He would, yeah.
He definitely
Balmer
would.
Is basically like,
He definitely
he's
would.
Like Tyrion here. He's yes. just gonna he's gonna get somebody to fight in his stead.
I will be your champion, yes. text message, Texans will beat Detroit 31-24. Green is
yeah.
the one player who was killing every play. That'll be interesting.
Okay.
Like if Jared Patterson gets in there and just plays steady. How much yeah. better does this look? Like, Kenyon Green was single-handedly destroying a dozen plays every game.
Oh, and especially, boy, two weeks in a row now, Slowick talked about how, in last week's press conference, Slowick was talking about how they wanted to come out in the third quarter. So after the two games ago, I'm blanking on
Indianapolis.
The Colts yeah. game. We want to come out and just establish ourselves in the second half. Yeah. He was talking about this before. Anyway, I think it was in the Green Bay game where they came out and on the very first play, Kenyon Green got destroyed,
yep.
pushed into the backfield.
Yep.
And then the next week, I think the same thing happened in the third quarter. So it's just been, yeah, there's been a common theme and a common denominator in a lot of the really bad plays for the Texans where Slowick and Caserio and D'Amico will tell us, hey, this is just, this is something that, you know, it's multiple things all over the place, and, you know, you can't blame it on one person. Well, man, one name keeps coming up a lot. One name Kenyon keeps Green. Coming up a lot, and I see a lot.
Yep. Commodus shanked Russell Crowe right before their fight is what the text
okay.
page is saying. Yeah.
What a bastard.
Stabbed him in the back is what it said, or knifed him in the stomach. I'm getting various body parts, but it sounds like Russell Crowe got stabbed by Commodus before the fight. All right, final segment coming up. Let's hear from C.J. Stroud. C.J. Stroud wants you guys to know this is a good football team. Also, what does he need to do more of? He was clear, very clear on that yesterday. You'll hear from the Texans quarterback coming up next.
Live from the Twin Peaks studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
The important topic on the 5-Hour Energy fan line right now is where exactly on the person of Maximus did Commodus stab him before the big fight?
Right.
Yeah. It says, I don't recall the scene, you know, verbatim or whatever the visual verbatim is. There's a couple stomachs. There's a couple backs. There's some ribs. There's a rib cage. I'm going to go with rib cage because that's kind of in between the stomach and the back, you know, like in a lung sort of place.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what I'll go with.
It was, but he weakened him. It was a very dirty move by Commodus.
Yeah.
Very dirty move.
Very dirty.
It's one of those things that makes you so angry. When you're watching the movie,
mm-hmm.
you know, just there's nothing quite like really wanting somebody to die in a movie that feel it's just it really gets you engaged with it. I try to do that as much as I can in real life. It's just like create like, okay, who are we going to pick that we really want to die?
Yeah.
And then it brings more drama to the situation.
Okay. I feel like this segment could be used as evidence someday.
I do that. I do that preemptively as a disincentive to me to actually murder people.
Gotcha.
I send them emails all the time of things that could be construed as murderous intent. So I'm like, okay, now I know.
Right.
Now I know I can't murder this person because yep. I've basically pointed the finger at myself. It's so I better be careful. I better toe the line.
So like a restrictor plate almost for you, these emails.
Yeah.
Like I can't, this is going to keep me from doing this. I can't go.
Well,
to
I was like, you remember you didn't understand why I texted you that the other night when I said, you know, you could just go away. And you were like,
I was confused.
The next day you texted me. You're like, what was this all about? And I was like, nothing. Don't worry about it. Consider yourself lucky.
Okay,
that's all
well,
I'll
I'm
say.
Glad I know
just
now.
Consider yourself. Just hug your kids. Okay.
Yeah. Mind your P's and Q's. All right. Let's.
But isn't it cool that it's like perfectly? It's one of the great things about watching fiction.
Yeah.
Is that you're perfectly? It's perfectly acceptable for you to want this person to die.
It's excellent. Yeah.
In a way that you can't get away with in real life.
Suspending
you
know? Disbelief.
Even with other. Yeah, like I could want King Joffrey to die a horrible, awful death.
Yeah.
But if all of a sudden I say that, yeah, I was watching an old Friends and oh my God, I just wanted Ross to have some, I wish somebody would have stabbed him in the throat. Then all of a sudden people think you're weird.
Yep.
I found.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You found.
So it's only within the confines of the actual, you know, the actual piece of art that you're watching. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Forwarding this text.
Football. Back to football.
Forwarding this text to HPD right now. All right. CJ Stroud, have you been able to get, speaking of somebody nearly dying, CJ Stroud on the field has nearly died several times over the last few weeks thanks to his offensive line. Have you been able to figure some things out with the accomplices to your potential death on the field, CJ Stroud, your offensive line?
Yeah, you know, I had a lot of great conversation with him, and you know, I believe, you know, that sometimes it takes getting hit in the mouth and maybe getting hit in the mouth multiple times to wake up. And I believe that, you know, this is a wake up call for us to get things fixed. And you know, I understand, like, man, if we give ourselves a shot and we stay in the green, like we move the ball really well. We just, you know, got to finish. We got to be able to lose those one bad plays in a drive, or those two bad plays, or the penalties. You know, it's always something. So if we can get rid of that, I believe that, you know, we can really be a great football team. And we already are, man. We're a really good football team. Like, there's no time to hang our heads down. It ain't that bad. Like, we're going to figure it out for sure.
And as you and I, like, I feel like over the last hour and a half, we have kind of found our way to, hey, maybe there is something to this one play or two play, the few plays that are really damaging us.
Yeah.
And maybe there is something to it being the fault of one person, that if you replace with somebody who is merely slightly below average at their job.
Right.
As opposed to horrible.
You know, I see the clip of Chris Sims is kind of floating around right now where he's explaining a lot of the Texans' offensive line issues and everything. It's something that we've seen the entire season, is that they've been making accommodations to protect the interior offensive line that makes it a lot harder for other people. You end up with tight ends blocking defensive ends. You end up with running backs blocking edge players, all these things. A lot of that is just because they've got to accommodate the weakness on the interior offensive line, but really mostly at left guard, more so than anywhere else. Everybody else on the offensive line, I could take those guys and say, all right, yeah, if you plug them into a team that's got four other good offensive linemen, this guy's not going to stick out like a sore thumb as the reason that their offense is struggling. We can't say that at left guard. So, yeah, there's a chance that you do see a different version of the Texans just by if Jarrett Patterson steps in and plays passably well.
Yes.
And there's reasons for optimism with Jarrett Patterson. So we'll see. I mean, for the pure experiment of it, it'd be nice. That's the only thing that would want me not having Nico Collins back this week. Don't get me wrong. I desperately want Nico Collins back this week. But it would be kind of cool if the Texans looked like a different offense and they did it without Nico Collins.
Yeah.
And then you get that added, this is what they can look like when they don't have to be petrified about pass protection, that it might actually be this much better when Nico Collins comes
back.
Yeah,
I'll point out, they played if I'm not mistaken, they played the Cincinnati game last year without Nico Collins in week 10. Nico was out for that game. They scored 30 points and beat Joe Burrow in Cincinnati with largely the same cast of characters. Now, they had Noah Brown in that game.
Noah Brown, yeah.
He was big in that game,
difference.
So that is a big difference. You're right. But still.
They had Noah Brown and Tank Dell.
Well, they had
Tank Dell almost got bisected in that game.
That's
remember
right.
how hard he got
yeah,
hit?
Yeah, yeah, I forgot about that.
I thought he was dead.
Yep.
I really did. I started saying prayers and lighting candles, and he came back the next series.
The battle red, the text message, the battle red jerseys will hide the fact that Kenyon stabbed CJ in the ribs. Come on now.
CJ stabbed Kenyon in the ribs.
Yeah.
That's a diabolical. I'll tell you what, CJ dislocating Kenyon Green's shoulder, that's when you start putting team needs above all else.
Yeah.
You know, that's when CJ made the decision that, all right, if Bobby ain't going to do it, if D'Amico ain't going to do it, if Casario's too concerned about Kenyon Green being a first round pick, then dag nabbit.
Yeah.
Which is a word that CJ uses a lot.
A lot.
Dadnabbit,
yeah.
I'm going to do it.
Consarn it, I'm going to use my butt to dislocate this guy's shoulder. And that's what he did.
What in tarnation's going on out here?
That's what he did. What in tarnation's. Let's hear from CJ Stroud. What does he need to work on? He's been off for a few extra days. What did you realize you needed to work on?
I would say I just got to have more fun. You know, I got to realize, you know, like, God's put a great talent in me. And, you know, I'm not playing for anybody else. First and foremost, I'm playing for him. I'm playing for my family, then my teammates, you know, and I got to remember that. I got to remember, you know, my priorities. And, you know, like, I can be joyful while, you know, suffering as well. You know, so that's something that I plan to do, is just have more fun, you know, be joyful in those moments. Because, you know, when you're in these trials and tribulations, you know, it teaches you things about yourself, and it teaches you to lean on Him. And so that's what I plan to do, and just, you know, lean on His strength. And, you know, and He's never forsaken me yet. So I plan, you know, to keep going and just have fun while doing it. You know, it's things I can get better fundamentally wise, for sure. You know, just getting the ball in my hand and things like that. But ultimately, I believe it's just having fun and being joyful while doing it.
I would say, Seth, the small sample size that we got of interaction on the various platforms after we played that clip earlier, including the 5-Hour Energy fan line, I would say it's skewed more positive pro CJ on that than it was negative, I think.
No. And I think coming from CJ, it's different. I think it's when D'Amico, if D'Amico were to say the exact same thing, I think that's where people, there's going to be some people that just chafe against the positivity, I think. Just because that it rubs against your kind of movie version of a head football coach.
Yeah.
And I think that a lot of people, they start feeling like, oh, that's participation trophy type attitude. And it's, D'Amico's not that guy. You know, like D'Amico, it's just that D'Amico's going to deliver his message, but he is holding guys to high standards. And it's you're in a business where 50% of your roster gets turned over every year. The accountability is built into the fact that guys get swapped out if they're not getting the job done. So I don't worry about that. I think with CJ, I think there is that part where you want to hear him say that, because the alternative is, man, this guy's getting crushed and he's wondering, what am I even doing?
It's ruining
here?
His spirit.
Yeah, you want to be sure that your quarterback's having fun. You want to be out there like Joe Montana, you know?
Yep.
I think that finding that right balance for CJ, especially, because CJ's just, I think what a lot of people misinterpreted as some kind of like quarterback personality issue or something pre-draft.
Yeah.
It was them not being able to read that, no, he's just really serious about what he does. So CJ is the kind of, there's some guys where you got to tell them, like, all right, quit the grab-assing, guys. Let's get to work. There's other guys that you got to manage by saying, all right, hey, look, no, you're not actually under as much stress or as much pressure as you think you are. Go out and have some fun. And, yeah, I think that's the perfect message. Yeah, like, CJ's never going to go to God and get a response from God. 11 for 30, CJ? Seriously? Are you kidding me? We've got fantasy rosters up here, you know. 11 for 30?
And then he shoots a lightning bolt like near his feet just to scare him a little bit, you know?
Yeah. Like, so it's good for CJ to be reminded that you know, that's not the standard God is holding you to, okay?
Yeah man.
So if you're keeping numero uno in mind, it's how are you treating your teammates? How are you competing? How are you, how are you being an example to others? All those things, so which also do tend to lead to good winning. There you go.
You know what's nice about having Jimmy Ward back is that Jimmy Ward steps in front of microphones and talks. We love Jimmy Ward. He's one of our favorite interviews. What did he make of CJ saying the team needs to have more fun?
CJ was saying he wants this team to have more fun. They want to enjoy themselves. You guys need to enjoy yourselves more. As you've been watching the team, have you noticed a lack of passion? Have you noticed the lack of anything like that this team needs?
I can't tell. I'm looking at the defense. looking at K4 and looking at Petrie. I don't know. Them guys always hyped up. CB, them guys always amped up. So, but I get where he's coming from. I just feel like just on like every side of the ball, like offense, special teams, and defense, I feel like we just need more juice. So that's probably what he's saying.
Yeah, more juice. Like,
so he basically just sold out the offense. He's saying, Jimmy, I interpret that as like, I mean, how much fun do you expect them to have when they're
I'm only watching the defense and they're having a hell of a time right now. Yeah. It's Jalen. He won't shut up. Yeah.
I should talk to CJ about having, sometimes if you have an abusive older brother, that you learn how to have fun while getting beat down. Mm. You got to learn at some point. You're like, all right, I just got to stop caring about heaven. I got to stop caring about some of these things. And you know what? I can actually take a lot of pain, and I'm still going to figure out a way to have fun doing it.
He should hire you as a fun consultant. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, this is how it's. I'm going to hire Seth CJ, and pay him by the hour.
You got to learn to take pride in your ability to withstand punishment, really.
Yeah.
So every time you get hit in the kidneys 2.3 seconds after the snap, look at it as a point of pride. They're like, you know what? I'm going to pop right up, and I'm having fun doing it.
There you go. There you go. John Lopez, Reggie Atatula, they are here. They are in the loop. Gentlemen, it's great to see you as always.
Yo.
How are you feeling? How are you handicapping the likelihood of Nico Collins and or Will Anderson playing this weekend based on them not practicing yesterday and D'Amico being very clear on Texans All Access this week about how he handles injuries in a very conservative must-practice fashion?
Yeah, that's that. All you laid it out perfectly.
Yeah.
I am not holding out hope. I am going to go ahead and assume the worst and then be pleasantly surprised.
It's a good way to approach it,
because
Reggie.
Yeah, I'm beginning to learn.
Yeah.
I'm learning my lessons here. With the hopeful, the Jimmy Ward one that 1 week did it for me, where it's like he practiced on Friday and I was like, here he comes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And then on Tuesday he doesn't play.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was like, okay, cool. Yeah. I've learned my lesson.
You've been Texaned. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. Henry Toa too. He came back.
That's right.
And I mean, that's just concussion protocol. But yeah, you can't read too much into it either way, I think.
Recent history tells us. How you feeling about it, John?
What he said, I'm just looking around the studio here. This looks like a hotel room that Van Halen stayed in.
Well, yeah, dude.
I mean, there's just stuff broken everywhere.
Dude, I know. This mic broken.
I
don't like to complain about it on the air, so
but basically
I have
what
it.
He said. I was just like,
no, let's complain about this. This thing was held together literally with a zip tie.
I actually want to talk about something entirely different. I want to talk about the fun and getting beat up. Like, Seth, what we're talking about here, doesn't that lead to being the guy where you're like, punch me in the ribs. Like, punch me in the abs.
Yeah, yeah.
No, punch. Hit me.
Here, we're even, right?
It won't hurt.
We're even, right?
Hit me,
guy. CJ's hit me.
It is
guy.
Sometimes athletes need to learn that you're not you can do more than you think you can, and whether you're not as tired as you think you are, and you're not in as much pain as you think you are, and you can kind of just learn to embrace the suck. And there's an element there, and like being able to have fun no matter how much it sucks.
There you go. Yeah.
Would that sell as a line of merch? Embrace the suck.
Embrace the suck. Yeah. If your team is tanking for the first overall pick, maybe.
You know what, Sean? I've told you this before. The book by I'm blanking on his name. He was a Tour de France. Greg LeMond.
Yeah.
I read a book by Greg LeMond when I was like 13 years old. He was a Tour de France winning cyclist back before Lance Armstrong.
Yeah.
And
it's
one
a clean
of his.
One.
One of his, he pointed out several times that like the ability to suffer is an athletic trait.
Yeah.
And that there is an ability to suffer and to be ugly in yourself, like just to be ugly and suffering and miserable and still going on, that is an athletic trait. And a lot of guys get to the NFL without having had to really endure any suffering because they've been so physically dominant in their entire lives.
Yeah, man.
And that's hard to coach into somebody at an advanced age, at age 22 or 23. Like, CJ's been through suffering, you know? Like, he's learned to manage some of that. It feels like offensively at times there's guys out there that lack the athletic trait of being able to withstand suffering.
Tolerance. Yeah, pain tolerance, whatever it may be. Pain, mental or psychological or physical pain, whatever the combination of that is. All right, we are done. We are out of time. Seth, antibodies to you. Football Friday
antibodies
tomorrow.
And I hope you're blessed with much suffering.
Thank you.
Blessed.
I have been, and I will be. And I
Sean,
thank you for
I can
that.
Make it go away at any point.
Yeah, you've texted me.
I can make
me.
It go away real quick.
I'm aware. Okay. I'm aware.
Yeah.
All right, we're done.